miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps thrive on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Revolution Radio, it's Saturday, and it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio. Drop a little honey on the lone highway.
Let me pour another. Hello, and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, October 17th, 2020. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Yeah, guys. Well, here we are. Another day on the funny farm. And our enemies are everywhere. We're surrounded by enemies. That's what they want us to think right now, man. Total paranoia. And you have to hand it to these insane sociopathic criminals that have taken over ownership of our world, really. I mean, that's what's essentially happened. And I'm not going to call these people the elite anymore because, you know, it's the wrong word. For one thing, there's this, you know, there's too much respect with that word. And words are important. These are criminal cultists. That's who these people really are, and some of them might not even really be human beings, even though they look like it. Yes, criminal cultists. I think that's what I want to call them, because elite has so many good connotations. Like, if you're elite, you're really good at something, or you're one of the best. No, these people are the worst, you know? But, you know, you have to hand it to these insane criminals. Because, you know, who saw this coming? You know, the path to the New World Order would be through medical tyranny. I didn't see it coming. I'll tell you that. That's a pretty good one. A good change in tact, you know. So now what's interesting, you know, we are all the enemy, all of us. We are all the enemy because every one of us might be infected with the Phantom Menace, right? The invisible enemy. Oh yeah. It's everywhere, but nowhere to be seen, right? And it's behind every tree and underneath every rock, just waiting to get you. Man, I'll tell you. So I, you know, kind of the message is right now that every person in your life, even that person standing right next to you right now, might be, you know, breathing and exuding a virus. Or shedding viruses from every orifice in their body. Yeah, yeah. That person right next to you is a potential enemy now. You can't trust anyone. Just think of the fear and paranoia that's being spread in our world right now, all based on a lie. It's just mind-boggling when you sit back and think about it. Yeah, they're really trying to reduce human beings to being nothing more than just, you know, a walking bag of virus-infested meat, right? You're just a big bag of meat that might have viruses in it and a brain. You know, there's no soul, no spiritual connotation, anything. That's all they want us to think about. Yeah, and now it's like every known bodily function, you know, be it breathing, sneezing, coughing, going to the bathroom, it's a potential disease spreader, right? I mean, you know, the virus even lurks in your toilet, right? So make sure to flush twice, guys. Be extra careful. Yeah, man, I'll tell you what. And now, you know, grandchildren are dangerous to their grandparents. Wow, how sick is that? And of course, in reality, the opposite is true. the opposite is true. Grandchildren give their grandparents a reason to live. It gives meaning to their lives. And it's such a tremendously important relationship, because it's sort of the connection to the past. When you learn from your grandparents, you learn so much about the past as a young person being with your grandparents. It's so incredibly important. But no, it's deadly now. Yeah, even a hug from a family member might be deadly. I mean, this really is, you got to look at it like a comedy routine sometimes, guys. You'll make it through the day a lot easier if you see a lot of this is just comedy. It's kabuki theater, man, comedy. And now it's like, you know, having Thanksgiving dinner with family and friends. It's deadly, apparently. I saw it on the news, so it must be true. Yeah, so don't do it. Don't have that Thanksgiving dinner, guys. It might destroy everything. It's just too dangerous. And it's probably best just to stay at home and hide under your bed in a fetal position with one of those little temperature checkers so you can check your temperature every 15 minutes just to make sure you're okay. Yeah, so life has been canceled until further notice. Oh, yeah, what a joke. But only if we consent. That really is the key to all of this. And that's one thing that David Icke brought up in the first part of the interview we played yesterday. And it's another thing I believe he hits on in the second part of the interview today as well. So stay tuned. Yeah, so life has been canceled. Why? Because our overlords say so. But yeah, just don't comply. And it doesn't work. Amazing how that works, isn't it? So yeah, you know, I was monitoring the enemy war footage known as the mainstream media on YouTube. And I believe it was on Thursday. I don't know. I'm always watching the news a day late because it's on YouTube. But they claimed it was either Thursday or Wednesday that 60,000 positive cases were confirmed in one day in the United States. And I'm thinking, wait a minute here, guys. Sorry about the noise there. I'm thinking, wait a minute. 60,000 positive cases in one day. All right, let's run the numbers on this one and use a little critical thinking here just for a brief moment, right? So they're claiming positive rates are 10 to 20%, right? So to get 60,000 positive tests in a day, that means you're going to need, like, what, 600,000 tests done in one day? I'm not buying it. Sorry. I mean, imagine the logistics of pulling that off. 600,000 tests in one day. I mean, how many of these coronavirus testing labs are there? You know, how many are there? Yeah, man, that's just absurd. I can't believe people say that with a straight face. So, you know, if you run the math on this, you would need like, 1,250 tests per minute done in an 8-hour day to come to that figure. So I don't know. I just doesn't add up to me. And if you just think about the logistics, just the, you know, the nuts and bolts of making that happen, there's no way that is real statistics, right? Liars, damn liars, and statistics proved true again. So, yeah, it's so clear that they're just trying to completely destroy the social order on all fronts right now, isn't it? You know, they want to reinvent society, and they keep saying build back. And that's even in the World Economic Forum documents about building back. And, of course, Groper Joe's campaign slogan is build back better, which I think has got to be the worst campaign slogan I have ever heard. I mean, it may not be incorrect English, but it certainly is awkward and stilted language. Need to get some better writers aboard here, maybe. Yeah, so, man, I'll tell you, crazy, huh? Totally crazy. So they're going for the complete destruction of Western society, right? Our personal relationships, our ability to interact, and now great art, that's racist. Same with great literature. And in fact, pretty much every statue is racist unless it's, you know, maybe some kind of strange modern art where it's non-representational art. Yeah. So, you know, I really think we've reached a point now where our hidden overlords, they've reached a point where they've just basically gone stark raving mad. And it's time for an intervention. You know, these people are crazy and maybe too much adrenal chrome. I don't know what they're on, but they've really gone stark raving mad. And I believe it's becoming clear, more and more clear, that they're preparing us for massive depopulation. And I think this new thinking that we're supposed to have towards one another is part of the conditioning for that, right? So if everybody's just a, you know, a big bag of virus infested flesh walking around, and, you know, and a potential biohazard and a potential enemy, then, you know, and it won't be so bad if, you know, gosh, a lot of people end up dying by the millions. And I think they're kind of softening our minds up for that with this coronavirus thing and just this new way that we're supposed to look at one another. Right? I think that's very significant. And, you know, less people means less chance of transmitting the virus. This is all insanity. And it's time to wake up, right? Yeah, I think that's happening, though. But all this nonsense only works if we give our consent. And that is so true. And I just hope everyone out there, man, that's listening to the show and listens to Revolution Radio starts to take a stand, you know, every day in their personal life. You know, what can I do? Well, you know, talk to people. You know, just when someone walks by you without a mask, go, hey, thanks for not wearing a mask. Good for you. And if you see someone wearing a mask, maybe talk to them. You know, you can kind of get a vibe from people. You can kind of tell if there's a potential good interaction with this person or a bad vibe. Give it a shot. And that's what our hidden overlords fear the most, is us talking to one another, right? That's what the social distancing is all about too. And remember, this censorship that we're seeing, this massive push for censorship, is the result of fear. It's the result of fear. These people are afraid of being exposed. And that's why they're doing the full-on push to silence any voice other than the official government narrative. You know, because, you know, they know that their ideology and the science won't stand up to close scrutiny and examination. And, you know, also, if this hoax is exposed, so many other things are going to tumble down like a house of cards. All of it. You know, all the experts that are pleading with us to wear your mask. Please just wear your mask. We're begging you. All these corrupt institutions are at stake here. We're in an all or nothing game. We really are. And our enemy knows it. They're going for it, man. This is all or nothing. And yeah, so this great call for censorship, it is based on fear. And I'm noticing too that they're really trying to amp up the emotions more. Lots of footage of crying doctors and crying nurses just brought to tears because of all the new cases coming in from this second wave. Yeah, supposedly Wisconsin is one of the big hot spots. And I hope to get some people. I know Giuseppe's got some family in Wisconsin still. I want to get some boots on the ground info. I've got a friend that lives in Chicago, and she has family ties to Wisconsin as well. And she's saying she's going to go out and check out this this field hospital. And I hope she does and takes some good footage with her phone or whatever, because I've seen lots of footage from the, you know, the Army hospitals they built at the Jacob Javits Center in New York City. And they even, you know, they moved in all these Army people with their Army uniforms on, you know, these field medics. And the place was a ghost town other than people in Army uniforms just walking around, checking their phone, having a snack, you know, not looking the least bit worried, very relaxed body language, and not one sign of anyone coming or going from the place. And I'm sure if anyone investigates this field hospital in Wisconsin, they're going to find the same thing. So, yeah, they're turning up the volume here, aren't they? They're turning up the fear and the propaganda. And it's kind of like, you know, the old Spinal Tap routine, you know, with, you know, these amps go to 11. You know, when we need the extra push, we turn them up to 11. Other amps only go up to 10. It's kind of like that, man. They're turning up the propaganda and censorship up to 11. And it really is based on fear. That's why they're doing it. We always need to remember that. These moves are based on fear. So, yeah, man, I just hope everyone, you know, kind of gets more brave and just starts talking to everybody they know and putting it on the line, man, because we're in the final fight here, man. If we give up on this one, if we let them win this one, humanity is screwed, glued, and tattooed, man. And that ain't no joke. And, like, you know, as an example, you know, yeah, I'm building this guest house on my property, right? And, you know, yesterday the maestro, that's what they call the, you know, a guy that can build a house. He's a maestro. And so he shows up with this new assistant, and it's this 19-year-old kid, and he's wearing a mask. All right, 19-year-old kid wearing a mask. And I thought at first he was just showing up with a mask on from walking from town, you know, to my property. But no, I watch him and he's starting to work with his mask on. So, you know, I come back like an hour later and there he is still with his mask on. So finally, I just walked up to him. And I said, hey, man, look, you can't work here with a mask. There's no mask on this property. Right. So if you want to work, you got to take the mask off. Because, look, you're a 19-year-old kid. You're healthy. You're strong. You don't need a mask. And he took the mask off. And it was kind of funny because the head guy, the maestro, laughed at him, you know, because he wasn't wearing a mask. So, you know, it was a little a small victory. And, you know, one person at a time, guys. That's what it's going to come down to. It's going to be a grassroots kind of thing, man. Yeah, and just think, you know, just think back a year ago. Just a year ago, if you saw some person walking around with a mask and rubber gloves on around town, you'd think that that person was mentally ill. You know, either that or they had some kind of really bad disease or a compromised immune system, one of the three. But now, you know, they've normalized this insane behavior and people are doing it to themselves. You know, no one's forcing anyone to strap the mask on, at least not yet. People do it willingly. They do it willingly. So, yeah, you know, now walking down the street without a mask is an act of courage, as ludicrous as that sounds. And, you know, shaking hands is an act of courage, too, man. You know, just the other day I met this guy and we were talking and he was going to give me one of those elbow bump things, you know. And I said, hey, man, just shake my hand. Don't worry. I'm not sick. You know, so we shook hands, but, you know, I'm not doing that elbow bump thing. That's just pathetic. Like, oh, I'm too afraid to touch your hand. I might get corona if we shake hands. Oh, God. Come on, man. Yeah, so I don't know, man. The camps are dividing up here, too, because the people that really believe in the masking, they're responding to the stimuli of this propaganda with, you know, all the doctors and nurses just pleading with you, wear a mask, just wear your damn mask, please. Seeing a lot of that on the news now, you know, just emotional appeals to wear the mask. So, you know, yesterday too, I was walking down the street and this guy gives me the stink eye. He's got one of those extra jumbo masks on that goes all the way across his face. You know, he gives me the kind of the stink eye, stares at me. You know, I just kind of look back at him, you know, what are you going to do about it? You know, it's like, you're not forcing me to wear a mask. Wear a mask if you want. I don't know, man. I think walking down the street without a mask is an act of courage. Who would have ever thought? Not me. And I don't know if you guys noticed too that the masks seem to be getting bigger. They're getting bigger. If you look at the kind of the style of mask that Joe Biden has been wearing, and I just see more of them on the news, these big giant masks, they go all the way up to, you know, just below your eyes and then wrap around your entire face to your ears. So really you're just like, you know, this pair of eyes walking around with a forehead, you know, it's bizarre. Because I remember when this first started, you know, it was just kind of the regular surgical mask, you know, the cup kind of style mask. Now they're getting bigger. So you're just eyes without a face walking around. Bizarre. Yeah. And so also just the other day, man, I had to change gyms. The owner of the gym I was working out at started telling people, hey, you need to wear a mask. You need to wear a mask. You know, he couldn't really force people, but he was encouraging people. Hey, you know, I want you to wear a mask. So I had to opt out of that gym and join a new one because I'm not playing that game. Yeah, there's a picture of Joe Biden with that's a good one. I guess underwear over his whole face. Yeah, there you go. That's what we're gonna need. That way you're really safe. That's a good one, Giuseppe. Yeah. So I don't know, man. It's just getting so crazy. So I had to change gyms, right? Because this guy's like, oh, wear a mask. So I'm like, I'm not doing it. Goodbye. And the new gym I'm working out at, I had the conversation before I joined, like, hey, no one here has to wear a mask, right? He goes, no, I don't care about that. And so I go to the new gym, and no one's wearing a mask except for one guy. This one guy walks in, and he's the biggest buffed out dude in the whole gym. I mean, you know, like professional bodybuilding level of working out. And he's the only one wearing a mask and working out with a mask on too. You know, he didn't just walk in with it. He kept it on while he worked out. And I'm thinking, man, that is the height of irony. You've got the biggest, buffest dude in the gym and he's the only one wearing a mask. God. And just like, how stupid do you look? Big, muscly guy, right? Wearing a mask, working out. Oh, that's sad. Yeah, so I tell you what, guys, I've reached peak corona. I am at peak corona, and I'm all set. I'm tired of it. I don't want to hear about it anymore. And we need to start spreading this vibe, like no more, you know, fear porn about the invisible enemy. Yeah, and it was funny, man. There was some interview with this guy. Some big shot from one of these intelligence agencies. I think his name was Gottlieb, the head of some, you know, important spy agency in the United States. And he actually said in this interview that whatever country controls the coronavirus vaccine will be the geopolitical leader of the world. And I couldn't help but laugh. It needed a rim shot, you know, like, whoever controls the coronavirus vaccine will be the geopolitical leader of the world. Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah, comedy act, man. So I guess now, like, armies are obsolete. We don't need armies anymore. All we need is a bunch of guys with white lab coats and an arsenal of syringes with bottles of vaccines. I guess that's all you need to conquer the world now. What a pathetic misleading statement that was. And it was in relation to, oh, Russia's trying to steal our vaccine. And, oh, by the way, Russia's vaccine is no good. And I guess Russia actually, some websites that were sympathetic to Russia, actually had information on there that, yes, you know, these vaccines are being made with monkey kidneys. That's what part of the culture that they're growing these things in. So, of course, they made it sound like, oh, you're going to turn into a monkey, according to these websites, if you take the vaccine. Pure disinformation by the evil Russians. Yeah, but at least they mentioned that they're using monkey parts to make these vaccines. Wow. That doesn't sound healthy to me. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on the internet, but that just doesn't sound healthy to me. Yeah, so in other news, the last thing I noticed was that they had a big story on the news about restaurants building these plastic bubbles so you can eat outdoors in a plastic bubble. Again, is this a comedy routine or what? And it just made me think of that movie with John Travolta from, I guess it was the 80s sometime. The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, right? Yeah, just live in a plastic bubble. Eat in a plastic bubble. And, you know, they had these bubbles set up in New York City and Boston and some other places. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, what's going to happen in January? And, you know, it ain't going to make no difference if you're in a plastic bubble when it's, you know, 10 degrees below zero. But, hey, that's the future they want for us. Eat in a plastic bubble and live in fear because you might die any moment. But guess what? That's always been true. Life is all about risks and experience. Yeah, so time to stop worrying and start living. Okay, that said, I want to bring on my co-host, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Scorpio. Great intro. Really hit all the key points. It's just getting more and more insane. And it's really, it's so insidious. It's just the height of evil from these globalist parasites, the internationalist Jew, as the brilliant Henry Ford referred to them as a century ago. So now what they're doing is taking the common cold and turning that into the nano-terrorist that's always there, and you never know. And the joke of it is this nano-terrorist, the coronavirus, is so ubiquitous, so omnipresent in nature. It's in every human. It's in every mammal. It's in birds. It's in insects. It's in reptilians. It's everywhere because it's part of, as the great Zach Bush points out, just a genius young guy, Zach Bush, I recommend you check out some of his talks on the internet. He points out there's three fundamental building blocks of life on this planet, the Gaia, the living biosphere. It's fungi, bacteria, and viruses, or viri, if you want to pronounce it correctly. And that's just it. And it's so, you know, they could never, they being the globalist parasites, could never take over the country or the world through force. It would be resisted. But there, and you so brilliantly for months now have pointed out the Shlomo Freud's deviant nephew, Edward Bernays, and how for over a century governments and transnational corporations have used mind control, and they've really been softening up the gullible, weak-minded generation after generation. So now you've got these like really weak-minded, for the most part, Gen X and boomers and millennials and Zoomers. They all believe, and they're so totally and completely ready to be controlled by fear, the nano-terrorists, the invisible always there. It's just idiotic. And you mentioned those tests. There isn't an actual coronavirus COVID-19 test that is worth anything. They all are just, you know, testing for some variation of the coronavirus. There's not one test that can accurately and specifically test for the SARS-CoV, the novel coronavirus. Can't be done. And yet they've scared these weak-minded, weak-willed cowards into, oh my God, I have to be tested. It's so disgusting. It makes me. Well, I'm not even gonna go there. I'm in a dark mood when I start thinking about all that stuff. I mean, what are we really fighting for? These cowards, these simpletons, these weak, useless lives. You know, if you can be so easily convinced to be afraid by a utterly corrupt and criminal vaccine industry and the operatives in government and in these world organizations like the corrupt UN, the corrupt World Health Organization, the whole spider web of these corrupt operatives that the deviant psychopath Bill Gates has put around him in the last 10 years since 2010. I cannot believe anyone would fall for this, and yet billions have.
Yeah, and Mer Bailey is making the point that it's pronounced viry, which rhymes with debris. So yeah, we want to be accurate because this is science.
Well, yeah, I guess if you want to pronounce it the European way, but I'm an American, so viry.
Yeah, man, and I don't know. It's just seeing people, you know, oh, let's go eat in a plastic bubble. Yeah, I mean, what's next, you know? Because I guess, you know, every bodily function is essentially a super spreading event. So what do you think about this idea that they're sort of softening up people to the idea that, hey, you know, we're going to have massive depopulation, but hey, everyone's your enemy anyway, so maybe that's not so bad. Do you think there's something to that line of thinking?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's something to that line of thinking. They are softening people up. And, you know, in addition to softening them up, there's also a massive scam, like a good grifter, a true grifter that the internationalist Jew is. Look at my left hand while my right hand is doing the actual damage. And did you know that there has been the greatest wealth transfer in the history of modern, you know, last millennia or so has just occurred and nobody even pays attention to it?
That's a great point. Yeah, because I've been saying for some time, this is more of an economic event than a medical event. And what you just said really sort of drives that home. And yeah, it is the old magician's trick. Don't look at this hand, look at the other hand. You know, be afraid because you might die at any minute. And, you know, here's another statistic that I heard on the NBC Nightly News, which I just had to laugh because it's a comedy routine. It really is. They're claiming that there's been 1 million positive tests in the last 3 weeks in the United States alone. Okay, 1 million positive. So that means if you have 10% positive rate, that means they've done 10 million tests in 3 weeks. I mean, how many of these corona laboratories do they have where they're doing these tests, I wonder? You know, I mean, give me a break.
Well, they're all mobile tests now, Scorpio. They've got people driving up and going to every little local doctor's office what do they call those things now? Those, instead of going to the emergency room, it's one level back. I can't think of the name of those things. Emergency care or urgent care. That's what they're calling them now. And plus at every like government office that everyone's doing this silly test. And the thing of it is it's not effective. It's not actually telling you, you know what it's telling you? You've got some variation of a corona bug in you, which is already, we all have it in you. So if they want, everyone can test positive. This is the mind rape we're dealing with.
Right. But see, I understand the mobile testing center, but what I was getting at, like they have to send these tests out to some laboratory to have them processed, right?
No, they don't. The older tests they do, I think, but the newer ones, it's based on some type of enzymatic testing that gives you a color. It's only like 5 minutes, supposedly.
Oh, it's like a home pregnancy test.
Right,
now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yep. Well, that guy's pregnant.
I
want to
know
what
company's making those extra large Q-tips, because that's a stock you should be buying right now. That's going to go up.
Yeah, like the great Judy Mikovits has said on the Perfect Triangle, every time she's been on, and she's been on three times now, because so much of this insane lunacy, you want a voice of reason with a medical scientist. And she keeps pointing out that you can scrape the back of someone's sinuses, which is a repository for every kind of yucky thing in the world, well, in the body rather. And so you can find whatever you want there. I mean, she's publicly stated that. So again, all these tests are just worthless. It's just so...
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they are worthless. And furthermore, I don't even believe that these numbers that, you know, they tested 10 million people in 3 weeks. I just don't believe it.
Oh, and also you referred to what's going on in Wisconsin. I have three brothers and sister. I mean, I spent more than half of my life there. And so I'm in contact every few days with someone. And this whole thing that it's this big outbreak in Wisconsin, it's totally along the lines of what, you know, they have a Democratic cowardly governor, Tony Evers, who is like a school marm, man. He was the education supervisor, like commissioner, whatever they call it. And he's just a total spineless little limp-wristed I could get crude, but I won't. He's just a nothing, right? And so, but he's, you know, carrying the same loyalist torch that Fredo Cuomo, the she beast Whitmer, the goof California governor, what's his name, the California guy?
Newsom.
Newsom, you know what always breaks me up is if the listeners are old enough, there was an awesome skit on Monty Python called the Twit Olympics, right? That was the first Twit skit they ever did. And they all kind of like peeled their lips back and put their teeth out as far as they could and you know, contorted their limbs and ran around like, you know, they had like the 200 meter and they all ran sideways and backwards. And the looks on their face, that to me, That's Newsom, man. He is the living embodiment of the twit. And every time I see that guy talking, he's just so propped up beyond what should be his standing in life. It's just ridiculous. He's just such a completely twittish empty suit. But now Evers, they all have served the politicization. Tough to say that. The making COVID-19 political to try and somehow have the cowardly voters who need the nanny state to tell them to wear masks and the cowardly voters who need to be tested every 24 minutes. And that's who is now the Democratic majority of this color revolution, this George Soros intended escapade to destroy the sovereign republic and create anarchy and communism in the United States and migrate us into the North American Union. So the latest one is Evers now. There is no outbreak every year in Wisconsin, especially this year because the Arctic air came in cool and very cool over there. People get sick, man. It's for 6,000 years in Oriental medicine. There's books about how seasonal weather change affects health. That's what's going on instead. And they're lying about it. There's no outbreak there. There's no, if anything, what's the outbreak is things like bacterial pneumonia, because these idiots are wearing these masks and making themselves sick. And so that's your phase two. It was all the intent of these demonic types to mask people and make sure they got sick with this seasonal weather chain.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we talk about the Twit Olympics. The other skit that it reminds me of is the Ministry of Silly Walks. You know, if they told people to walk in a funny, strange way, it might help them prevent getting the virus. I bet a certain percentage of people would do it, you know, just like in the skit. But in Wisconsin, that field hospital that they're claiming is being built or was built, it's in Madison at the fairgrounds, correct?
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, man, maybe you could try to get some intel from your family members, if anyone's near there. Like I said, I've got a friend that she says she's going to go there and check it out, because I have got a strong suspicion that it's going to be a big box of nothing, and it's going to be just an empty, you know, place where there's a few people with, you know, white lab coats walking around.
You know who we could have as our boots on the ground, and I'll bring it up to him when I text him a little later. I have to ask him a question. Is Professor James Fetzer? He lives like 8 miles away from Madison.
Oh yeah,
he could get in the car and take a drive and see what's up. I'll have to suggest that to him.
Yeah, get some pictures, because you know, they set up a bunch of different field hospitals in New York City. You know, I watched, you know, videos from several people, including, you know, this one guy. I don't remember his name. He had a strange account name. But he did a bunch of videos at that Jacob Javits Center in New York City. And it was just, you know, they shipped in all these army people and nothing was going on. You know, these people were just, a couple of times he just set up his camera across the street and zoomed in inside the windows of the place. And the people in there were just walking around, shucking and jiving, checking their phone, having a snack. I mean, their body language wasn't like, oh my God, we're living through a pandemic emergency. You know, it wasn't anything close to that.
Oy vey, Jacob Javits. Yeah, the a viewer, Ty Anderson, who's watching us on YouTube. And by the way, now, Scorpio and I have created a companion, a brotherly, sisterly, transgendered video effort to – that's just a joke, of course to broadcast video. And so we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, and we're on Twitter. So if you right now, a fellow watching us on YouTube named Ty Anderson wrote, the people of Hudson, Wisconsin put the city council in their place to vote down a mask mandate. And then he gave a link, I think. And that's awesome, man. That's just it. The people up north are no nonsense, you know, rural people. They're country mice, you know, that whole city mouse, country mouse thing. And they, you know, I have friends all around the rural parts of Wisconsin. And when I've talked to them the last couple of months, not one of them believes any of this BS. This is all driven by cowardly Governor Tony Evers for trying to get Groper Joe to be President Pedo Biden. This is all this is.
So Giuseppe, you're telling me that the bodies aren't stacking up on the sidewalks like firewood in Wisconsin right now?
No, they're not at all. I guarantee it. I guarantee it.
Wow. Unbelievable. And it was funny on the NBC Nightly News, they had the footage from one of the hospitals in Wisconsin, and apparently all the beds are full there, packed full, chock full of coronavirus patients. They don't have any more beds left, so don't even try to get into the hospital. And they had this photograph that was so obviously staged of one of the workers in the hospital. And, you know, he had the full gown on, you know, the biohazard suit and the shield and the mask and everything. And then there's a photo of him, like, with his hands over his face, like, oh God, you know, over his shield, I should say.
You know,
it was just such an obviously staged photograph. Like, okay, bend down a little more. Okay, no, put your hands a little higher. Okay, there you go. Okay, hold it right there. Click, 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 click. It's just Hollywood, man.
You know, that's awesome. In the Revolution Radio chat room, they're putting in pictures of twits from Monty Python. It looks so much like Newsom. But hey, you know, the fantastic Blackbird 9, Frederick C. Blackburn's in the chat room. Man, was that a great show last week with him and Golden Pipe Wrench. We have to have them back. I was really bummed that weather or whatever prevented his brilliant weekly podcast, The Breakfast Club. I went and I was going to listen to it when I was editing Fetzer's video, and I'm like, ah, man, it's not there. Damn it, I was ready. You know how you get excited about something? And Lady Horse, one of the management leaders, is there. And some lunatic named Scorpio, I don't know how that guy get in there, and Up and Eagle Flower and myself and Stardust Man, the David Bowie song, Snippets. By the way, Snippets put up her brilliant Saturday collection of political commentary cartoons and social commentary. I was just scrolling through it. It's really good, as always, at snippets-and-slappets.blogspot.com. I got to tell you, Snippets, you really need to shorten that to something like snippets.com and pay for the URL. That would be a lot easier for you. Probably increase your traffic. And then Bailey, great.
You know, it's good to get a laugh now more than ever. And of course, all great humor is always based on truth. And, you know, the good thing about Blackbird 9 is you already put him on the spot. And he said on air that he'd come back on the show. So now he has no choice.
No, he has no choice.
Just
he
kidding.
Has to honor his commitment.
That was a great conversation. And I really like those guys' approach to analyzing things. And they don't pull any punches, too. That's the other thing I really appreciated. There was no, beating around the bush, except for maybe saying chicken swinger instead of another term. But, people know what it means. So
right.
I'm looking forward to talking to those guys again. Golden Pipe Wrench, too. A lot of really original thinking, not just parroting stuff they heard from somebody else, you know.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, both those guys, especially Blackbird 9, just – I'm a bright guy, but, I mean, I'm always in awe of running into big, big brains, and he's got a big, big brain. It's really great to have a conversation with him. And so continuing on, Mitzi, Philip, Dry Fly Guy, okay, AR185162, Captain Fred, Lone Gunman, Wall-E, Monster, Simply Red, 77, Comet, Willow, one of the great hosts, Suri Sunflower, Boots, Omega Logos, Lusitania, jeez, Flippy, yeah. Boy Solomon, May, ST139, Cat Dog Girl, Joe Tones, the great Joe Tones, Gino27, and Pat Rabbit, who is coming on to the Wisdom Circle soon. I mean, he's got phenomenal insights into wisdom and spirituality, and we look forward to him joining the Wisdom Circle soon. So thanks, everybody. And we urge everyone, whether you're listening on – well, we hope you're listening on Revolution Radio, but if you are watching on video, go over to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com and sign in and create a little app in Chatsy, which is a pretty popular chat engine, and support Revolution Radio. We got this start, Scorpio and I both, on Revolution Radio, and we are completely loyal to Revolution Radio, and everything else we're doing is just growing off that. But, you know, Revolution Radio is true free speech, and we should get into it in a moment once I finish this little spiel, Scorpio, about the insane censorship that happened this past week. But you'll never be censored here. You know, they don't like it if you drop F-bombs. We want to avoid that and some other true vulgarities. But other than that, you can say whatever you want. Free speech is not only guaranteed in the Constitution, it's really a divine right if you think about it. And yet these masks are like slavery. Yeah, absolutely. So if you can go to Revolution.radio or freedomslips.com, and at the website, in addition to joining the chat room, you can donate with a donate button. You can go to the swag store and get a cool Revolution Radio t-shirt. I bought a couple for myself. My wife was wearing mine yesterday, and you can get bags, hats, and the head guy now, a mad painter, Thomas, is a great artist, and he's designed some t-shirts. And the founder, Mike Ringley, who sadly Nighthawk died a year ago, he's got some awesome designs there. And when I bought, I got one Thomas and one Nighthawk shirt each. And then if you really want to help, sign up for Patreon and give us $5, $10, $15, $20 a month, because then you'll get access to thousands of hours in the archives. Right now, the archives are free, kind of like your crack dealer on the corner want to give you a little sample and get you hooked. And then we want you coming back and join on Patreon, because they're not always going to be free. And so please sign up and support the effort, because it costs money to run 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year radio station, Studio A and Studio B. All of us, the 100 or so, nearly 100 hosts, and the people doing the heavy lifting behind the scenes, like Joe Tones and Black and Mr. Rowe on the cloud and keeping this all going. Everyone's donating their time, and we ask that you donate a little bit of cash to help this continue on for another 10 years with the vision of Nighthawk. So, Scorpio, what do you think?
Absolutely, and it really is true. This is more important than ever, and especially, you know, a bastion of free speech like this, free speech and free thought. You can think what you want and say what you want. And like you said, that's a God-given right. That's far beyond anything that the Constitution says. And, you know, this purge that we saw this few days ago from YouTube pretty much took out what I guess some of the top 10 people. And, you know, I guess part of the reason is that some of them mentioned – they dared to mention QAnon, which, you know, I'm very skeptical of personally. I've made that very clear from the beginning about that. But isn't it funny? The FBI has declared that QAnon is a domestic terrorist organization. Those tweets are just so dangerous, Giuseppe. What are we going to do, man?
Well, yeah, I mean, and a couple weeks ago, the puppet head of the FBI, right now the director, Cray or Ray, I never remember which it is. I do remember the AY. A is he went before Congress and testified that the greatest threat right now are white nationalists. And I was like looking in the mirror and like, oh, come on, Director Cray, I'm not that much of a threat. And but maybe to you I am, and to your fellow traitors, but to the good people, the majority of this country who are white nationalists, who don't want to become communists under the control of George Soros and his fellow Satanist Talmudic chicken swingers. Ah, I got to say it. And so it's ridiculous. I mean, the level of out and out mind rapery, mind control, lying is at levels I have never seen in my life. And, you know, there's been some ops going on, but nothing like this. This is just insane. And coming up next hour.
The thing I found a little shocking about this big purge was, you know, so many of the people that were purged are actually quite tame and mild compared to the kind of stuff you and I talk about. I was a little shocked. You know, the amazing Polly was purged, and she does great research. I like her videos very much.
Right.
But I don't even see what they got her on. Maybe she must have mentioned QAnon a few times or something. I don't know. Or maybe just questioning the official government narrative about the corona pandemic is enough to get purged now. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what happened there.
That is interesting. I mean, Sarah Westall, who is an excellent journalist and has been fighting the corporate globalist state for a long time, they've messed with her life. And others, yeah, it's funny, last night I finally had a little time and I looked at my main YouTube channel as a fan, right? We have these YouTube channels to broadcast now, but the one I've had for a long time, just I keep that just as a fan. And before that purge, I had 1,006 sites over the decade I had subscribed to, and after the purge, it was down to 820. So they wiped out nearly 200 sites that I enjoyed. So, man,
wow, that's crazy, man.
That is crazy, man. It blew my mind. Right, right. I don't even know.
Well, that's one thing I like to do is make sure to frequent plenty of far left sites and just really try to confuse the algorithms. Right. You know, I'm a big fan of Amy Goodman, according to the algorithm. So, you know.
Amy Goodman. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this can tie up two statements. Number one, if QAnon was real, they would have jumped on this whole pedo network within a year, because, you know, the ongoing, there are good law enforcement people in the FBI and in the various states, and they are for years and years trying to go through the dark web and find these networks. And it takes a long time sometimes. And so, you know, I would have been willing to give the white hats a year, even 2 years to tie that all together. But they have everything they're taking credit for was underway before they took office. So, you know, it doesn't just suddenly, we're going to go get this. You have to put together such a rock solid case to go after those people. Cause if you're wrong, man, you're going to be paying them a lot of money. Cause that destroys their life. So, you know, a lot of these arrests they're talking about, they were underway 5-6 years ago at the state level. And then the feds jump in. So, they're the people who are truly guilty, like Hillary Clinton's laptop, she should be in jail right now. And she hasn't even been anyway. So it's all BS. It's all a joke, just more disinformation to make it look like QAnon in some way was supporting Trump. So anything Trump by the globalist media has to be vilified there. That's the answer.
Hey, Hillary Clinton's laptop, that's a good name for a band. What do you think?
Yeah, right. That is really good.
Well, so we're almost at the top of the hour, and next hour we're going to play part two of our interview with Mr. David Icke, and that's going to be good. What are your final thoughts for the top of the hour, Giuseppe?
I think that in part two of the interview, which is another 40, 45 minutes, David really gets cooking. He really gets comfortable with us, and it's a fantastic interview. I look forward to hearing it again. There was so much there that even when I was editing it for the show, you know, breaking it up into two parts, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's what he means. So it's going to be good.
Okay, perfect timing. There's the music, so everyone stay tuned for our interview with David Icke. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back with hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And in just a few minutes, we're going to start up part two of our interview with David Icke. And I just want to thank everyone out there for listening and the people in the chat room. Man, there's some funny stuff going on in there. Philip in Revolution Radio chat room is saying, Amy Goodman has aged so gracefully, almost as gracefully as Hillary Clinton. Boy, that ain't that the truth, man. The years have not been kind to Amy or Hillary, but, you know, your actions sort of become molded into your face over the years. So, yeah, no surprise there.
Yeah, you know, that is fascinating. It's sort of a dilemma for them because the more they push, the more they reveal, and there's nothing they can do about that. And it goes back to what you were saying about censorship. The censorship is actually an act of desperation.
Exactly.
And it shows a real weakness that they know they have. And, you know, what is becoming so clear, David, is that we are facing an anti-human agenda. They're trying to reduce human beings to just being like this bag of virus-infested flesh that walks around exuding viruses everywhere. Like, that's all humanity is now, right? And it's just crucial that we don't buy this idea of what human beings are. And, you know, the hallmark of all of their agendas is always fear. They're all fear-based. That's the hallmark of everything they do. And losing fear really is the most important thing. I agree it's so much with what you're saying.
What do people
I wanted to ask you, what do you think the timeline is that we're facing now as this accelerates? Do you have any feeling or understanding of what the timeline might be?
They're basically giving us the timeline. They're giving us the timeline of their real end game, which is to connect the human mind and the human body, the human brain, to artificial intelligence. And people like Ray Kurzweil at Google, the so-called futurist who claims an 80% accuracy in predicting the future. Well, it's easy to predict the future if you know what the agenda's future is meant to be, isn't it, Ray? Hey, mate? But he's given the period, and others have talked about this too, and it's a key year, you know, 2030. If you look at this UN agenda, literally called an agenda 2030, It's for the transformation of human society using climate change, although now pandemic hoax as well, but human-caused climate change is the driver. And then, what is it? Agenda 2030. And then the last time, how many times, but the last time they said we've got 12 years to save the planet because of global warming, that would take us to about 2030. So there are kind of, you start to see that. Now, what's happening, because it's all psychology, and this is why they're really focusing on the kids, is they have a lot of extreme things coming. People think it's extreme now. Well, you know, just do nothing and then observe, because that's what will happen. And the human spirit has to be broken. Now, they've broken the human spirit in lots of people, but lots of people they haven't. And what they have to break is self-respect. They have to do that, because self-respect is the state of being that has broken every tyranny in history. Because it's self-respect that says, no, I'm not doing it. No, I don't care. Do what you like. Do what you like. I ain't doing it. And that it all comes out of self-respect. Because once self-respect is gone, the only thing left is submission. Because without self-respect, only submission remains. So what they're trying to do, and as you point some examples there, they're trying to break the self-respect of humanity individually and collectively. So if you look at, because of course the human caused climate change and the pandemic hoax are both being orchestrated by the same cult, and therefore to the same end, and therefore using the same psychological methods. So what are they saying? Look at Extinction Rebellion and this climate cult, as I call it. What are they saying about humanity? Humanity is horrible. It's dangerous. It's a virus. It's because of humanity. Horrible humanity. They're horrible. You're horrible. That the planet is dying. And then they bring the kids in, divide from old people, older people. See, it's the old people. That's why our future's been destroyed. See how it all kind of works. In other words, humans are dangerous. Humans are horrible. And then you come to the pandemic hoax, and what they're saying is humans are dangerous. You must stay away from other humans. Not only must you stay away from other humans who could be dangerous to you, you could be dangerous to them. You are dangerous. Then you come to the mask. This is the greatest psychological operation in current events of all. Because I said right at the start, the plan is to incrementally, all over the world, increase the number of situations that they say you have to wear a mask, and increase, crucially, the length of time you have to wear it. And where they're leading, it's already happened in many parts of the world, but in Britain, it's leading towards you can't leave your home without wearing a mask. Well, what I say to the authorities in Britain is bloody watch me, mate, because you may be able to enslave my body, but you're not able to enslave my mind, and I'm not having it. So there's no way that I'm going there, and you better, they must know that already. So I've not worn a mask, and I've not done any of this stuff because I have too much self-respect. And so the mask is given to us because they have to give the conscious mind an excuse for why they're doing something. So they say it's to protect you from the virus. Well, that's insane. As endless now. I mean, really off the chart. Scientific studies and opinions of doctors and scientists have said these masks don't protect you from viral particles, even if you believe there is a virus. So it's nothing to do with that. It's to do with two things. One, physical, which is denying oxygen and making people breathe back the carbon dioxide their body's trying to expel. And as has been shown already, these masks very quickly develop what they call bacterial colonies and mold, which then start affecting health. All those things affect health, not least respiratory health. There was a picture of a child which I saw this week, with a bacterial infection over the nose and all this area, which was mask related. So on one level, they're increasing the health consequences caused by masks, and they're going to call it COVID-19. But the foundation of the masks is psychological, because you used the word, I think, a few minutes ago, mate, dehumanization. Well, what's that? It's dehumanization. Our human interaction and discourse is founded on facial expressions. And without the facial expressions, that discourse is gone. Children, particularly babies, pick up all their guidance from the facial movements, expressions of particularly the mother. And with that gone, they will be completely, very confused, because they're getting no guidance from facial expressions. I've got a book here by a psychologist all about how babies pick up their cues and their understandings from facial expressions of the mother in the early years, all gone when the mother's got a mask on. And it's also deleting the individuality of the person, because I know people who know people who've walked past them both with masks on, and they've not even recognized someone they've known for decades. So that's all part of it as well. But I did a lot of research from about 1996 and across the millennium into mind control, MK Ultra and Project Monarch in America. And I met a lot of people who were in that program and of survivors of that program. And one of them was a lady called Kathy O'Brien, who I first met in 1996. And I've met her many times since. And I've also met her daughter, Kelly. And Kelly was born in captivity. Her mother was in MK Ultra and gave birth to Kelly while in captivity. And Kathy contacted me about 3 weeks ago. And she said, I just want to make a point about masks. She said, my daughter Kelly was born into MK Ultra. And from the age of two, they made her wear a mask for two main reasons. One, to delete her sense of individuality and uniqueness. But also, this is the key, I think, in terms of masks on kids in schools and so on, to reduce the amount of oxygen reaching the brain, right, because that made it easier to rewire the personality and perceptions. And so now you have kids wearing masks. I mean, even by the official statistics, even if you believe in it, they have virtually no chance of getting this thing. But they're having to wear masks. And the idea is to keep increasing the length of time that people wear masks, especially kids, as all part of this whole process. What they're doing, in effect, is they're taking the techniques of MK Ultra and they're applying them to the global population. But symbols are incredibly powerful, because they are the language of the subconscious. We dream in symbols, in symbolism, and not, though rarely, but very rarely, in literal terms, because the language of the subconscious is symbols. This is why this cult has this whole language of symbolism. The all-seeing eye and the pyramid and the lighted torch held by the Statue of Liberty, all these things are the most obvious ones. But there's a whole language going into very great detail of symbolism. And they put those symbols all around us because they're talking to the subconscious. And the symbol of the mask is subjugation, silencing, submission, and dehumanization. But symbols can be used in another way too. And while putting a mask on is symbolic of your subjugation, taking the mask off, or even not putting it on at all, and chuck it in a bin, is a massively powerful symbol of you expressing your freedom. And we have this symbol now, this symbol of the mask, which we can turn into a symbol of freedom by people refusing to wear it.
That is absolutely inspiring, David. I thank you again for coming on to Revolution Radio and Rising Tide Media. And one of my favorite quotes of yours is, it is appropriate that the word ignorance is an extension of the word ignore. We ignore so much, so we become ignorant. And so these days, especially with the mask wearers, cognitive dissonance reigns supreme. And what is your recommendation to people, in addition to taking off the mask, but also the ability to kind of expand their minds a little bit to at least be neutral to these truths? So many now actively resist it, and their MK Ultra like programming through the mass media is, no, I trust the government. No, I trust Big Pharma. No, I trust, you know, the devil, really. And so what can we do to urge people to open up their perspective a little bit and take some of this truth in?
Well, first of all, look around you see how few people are driving this. Because one of the things that's been thrown at me over the years, of course, is it's not possible for a few to control the world. Well, if the human race gives its power to a few people, they can. And we've seen that. So the power of no is the way out of here. But it's also a very simple, if you just start at a simple premise, which shouldn't be too difficult given the cascade of history. Authority lies to us. Governments lie to us. Corporations lie to us. The big pharma corporations, lying is their very foundation of their business.
Yeah.
Well, they lie to us, right? So is that too much of a stretch, people, that they lie to us, given the history of them lying to us? So instead of saying, well, the government says this, or this big pharmaceutical cartel that makes its multi billions out of us being sick cares about us being well. Ha ha! I love it. So they lie to us. So when they tell us something, instead of saying, okay, this must be correct, start from the premise they're lying to you. Because my experience over 30 years is if you simply take what authority says to you and invert it, reverse it, you're going to be massively closer to the truth doing that than if you accept what they say is correct. It works virtually every time. So instead of saying, you know, I'm going to believe what they say, they lie to us. So you start from that premise. So then you say, okay, now I'm going to look into other areas of information to see if I can get a fix on whether they're lying this time. 99.9% of the time it will be yes. But also the key thing, why are they lying to me? Now, they're lying to you because they want to dictate your perception so that your behavior will allow them to take the world in the direction that they want. That's why they're lying to you. The question of the ages, whenever we're being told anything, who benefits? Let's just take the last few months called 2020. Who benefits from what has happened? Okay. Has the population benefited? Oh, absolutely not. They've lost jobs, they've lost businesses, and there are many reasons why that was made to happen by ludicrous lockdowns. Who's benefited from the lockdowns? Small business, medium business, even some big business that's not owned by the cult. No. Destroyed them. Who's benefited from the lockdowns financially, economically? Amazon, Facebook, all these big corporations owned by the cult. Who's benefited from people facing all these restrictions? Human freedom? No. What's benefited is anyone who wants to destroy human freedom. Anyone that wants to introduce a situation where a tiny few people are dictating the fine detail of the lives of the population, they benefit from what has happened. So when you start to look at it from this perspective, suddenly you say, well, hold on a minute. The only people that have benefited are the people telling us we have to do it. and then, you know, that's when the curtain opens, the mist clears, and you start to see what's really behind this. And it's interesting, you know, with the Yellow Brick Road and the Wizard of Oz, right, which is actually a part of the a programming technique within MKUltra. Oh, no. But what happened? They were frightened of the wizard and the power of the wizard. And then they saw when the curtain opened.
Yeah.
Power was illusory. The wizard had no power. Its power was in persuading others it had power. And that's exactly what we're facing. We are being subjugated by the illusion that authority has power over us, only if we allow it. And when we stop, it's game over. And it better be game over soon, because if people think it's bad now, and it is, this is only where we are now. It's not where it's meant to go. So now, before it gets even more challenging.
Yeah. David, you know, in your years of research, you know, obviously the bankers are somewhere near the top of the pyramid with their ability to, create money out of nothing, is essentially an act of alchemy or black magic. And that's the money is what enables them to enact everything. But, you know, years ago, there was some talk of a Pindar character. Who do you think is at the top of the pyramid in this whole cult structure that we're dealing with?
Well, the Rothschilds are right up there. But the inner core of the core are people that don't put themselves on public display. Right. And if you go deep enough into it, you leave the human realm. This is one of the areas that I've had a lot of ridicule about, because, you know, people look at the night sky and they see those amazing explosion of lights and stars and planets, and they say, do you think we're alone? What? And then you think that what you're seeing in that night sky is a tiny, tiny smear of what exists in the space you're looking at, or the, what appears to be the space you're looking at, because we live in a reality in which, according to mainstream science, the electromagnetic spectrum is 0.005% of what exists in the universe. And visible light, which is the only frequency band that we can see, so our entire visual reality, is a tiny smear of the 0.005%. So when people go, do you think we're alone? they're actually talking about a smear of 0.005% of what exists in the universe. What exists in terms of life and reality and expressions of life beyond the smear that we can see? Well, infinite possibility. But none of this is taught in the schools, and science is all kind of dismissing it because its whole premise has been developed by the cult. But, you know, these people in this cult are very sick. They're super psychopathic, but intellectually they're not stupid. Not least in understanding how to manipulate the human psyche and human perception. So if they're not stupid, why are they constantly doing their satanic rituals to unseen forces? Why are they doing that? I mean, I've talked to so many people around the world who've taken part in these rituals, and the way they describe them is in very compelling common themes. Because they're doing the rituals now, they were doing in ancient Babylon, why and beyond. And why? Because the rituals are designed to have an impact on this field I talked about, a vibrational impact on this field, which thins out the energetic difference and frequency difference between their ritual and this, these other gods that they worship and are actually driving human society via this cult web. They're doing it because these other forces exist. And one of the things that I found very, again, compelling over the decades is when you travel around the world and you talk to Native Americans, you talk to Aboriginals, you talk to the Zulu people from the Zulu Nation and so on around the world, and you read ancient accounts, you read accounts of the Gnostics who talked about manipulative entities called archons, a Greek word meaning rulers.
Right.
Then you look at the Islamic, it's actually pre-Islamic perception of what they call the jinn, who are entities operating outside of human sight, manipulating human society. And you see this compelling theme. And then you see the whole basis of these satanic rituals and who they're actually interacting with and worshipping in the ritual. And the common themes are very, very compelling. So that's what's driving it from the unseen. And this global web is playing it out in the world that we perceive and we experience. But...
All right, we're going to be coming up to the break, Scorpio, here in a moment or two. And after the break, we'll continue with the final part of the David Icke interview. I mean, just so much there, don't you think?
Well, yeah. And, you know, he kept talking about the denial of oxygen. That's exactly right. And it's so detrimental, both physically, spiritually, and mentally. And, of course, it ties into this other agenda, I can't breathe. Right? With Black right. Lives Matter.
Yeah. And this whole second wave that we were talking about in hour one is nothing more than the disease buildup of bacteria and viruses coming and making you sick. It's just so insidious, so satanic, as Ike himself got to who's really in power. And it's otherworldly, as we well know. I mean, it's just... that's why you have to look inside and find your own connection with the divine to fight this.
That's so true. A case of the sniffles is deadly now. Live in fear. Okay, we'll be right back, guys, with the last part of the interview. Everyone stay tuned. Okay, we are back here on Revolution Radio, Operation Scorpio, and we're going to play the final segment of our interview with David Icke. Giuseppe, do you have any thoughts before we kick in the interview?
I think that David Icke's amazing guy. I was really honored that he would take the time to, you know, we're a small fish in the pond he's dealing with, because he's white hot right now and he's doing, you know, giving speeches to, you know, 50,000 people in Trafalgar Square and being part of these big deals like the G. Edgar Griffith thing at Jekyll Island and but it's cool. You know, he hasn't forgotten his roots, and I think he really dug it that we have been big, big supporters of his and followers since the 90s. And by the end of the interview, he really warmed up. And as listeners will hear at the end, he's, let's do it again, mate. And I'm going to hold it to him, just like we're holding Blackbird 9 to come back. We're bringing David Icke back, too. Well, it'd be great if we could get him to do it live on one of the afternoon shows. That would be really cool.
That would be cool. Absolutely. Yeah. One thing that's so important is stressing the spiritual connection to all of this. It's easy to get caught up in all the, you know, the conspiracy information and sort of forget the spiritual aspect. And the spiritual aspect really is the most important part of this battle, because we really are creating reality together, and we should never forget that. These people are not going to create our reality for us anymore. It's time for us to create our own reality together.
Yeah, that is so well stated. Is, you know, it's up to you, the individual, to look inside and connect with the divine that animates you. But we are creating in this illusion, this Maya, this hologram, whatever you want to call it. That's where we work together. And so it's sad that so many of people, you know, starting with the Frankfurt School back in 1912, about 110 years ago, the idea that they could entrain the mind and get people to not look for the spiritual connection. And even a lot of the dogmatic religions are not very good for training you how to connect with the divine. They want you to follow them more through your mind. And really, in Oriental medicine and Taoism, that it's a triangle of body, mind, and spirit. And all the Satanists, the chicken swingers, want you to just do it all through your mind. And that is the biggest mistake. That's how they can truly control you.
Yeah. And Tenanson is talking about David Icke's 6-hour interview with Credo Mutua. Great tape, really fascinating information. And where Credo talks about eating a little piece of a gray and the physical and spiritual effects it had as part of his initiation into this sort of brotherhood of shamans in Africa.
Oh, you know, I didn't know that interview exists. I'll have to go find that and watch that. Wow. How old is that, by the way?
Oh, it's old. That came out in the 90s sometime. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube somewhere. It's definitely worth checking out, though.
It's
some wild stuff.
Wow, that sounds cool. Yeah, it would be interesting to go back and watch an interview like that in the 90s, because when he talks about all of it, because in predicting stuff, it'll show how much of it actually has come true.
Well, I remember seeing that when it came out, and this is back in the days of VHS tapes, right? So we, you know, me and my friends, we'd trade tapes and just to save money, and boy, how times have changed.
No kidding. Really? Yeah.
What they have to do to impose this control is they have to bring us down, because they operate, because every emotion, every thought, every state of being is represented by frequency. The frequency of depression, heavy, dense, slow frequency, fear, freeze frequency, love, high frequency, joy, high frequency. All these different things are different frequencies. And what they operate within is a band of frequency that's very low vibrational. It basically all around the frequency of fear and all the offshoots of fear, anxiety, depression, all these things. So what they have to do, because that's their stadium, they can't go into these other levels because of their state of being. They have to pull humanity into this frequency band. So they've structured society to dictate maximum fear, maximum anxiety, maximum depression, all these low vibrational emotions to pull us in. And when you do that, you come into a like a perceptual bubble. You start to process everything through the five senses alone. And basically you're operating, when you're in five sense alone reality, you're operating in their frequency stadium. But when, and that's why they want us to self-identify with our labels. They want us to identify with being a man, a woman, this religion, that race, whatever. Because these are not who we are. They're not the true I. They are what the true I is experiencing. So the idea is to get us to self-identify the true I with an experience, a label. So we come into these low vibrational states and also these senses of limitation. If you self-identify only with what we call the physical and the labels of the physical, then everything seems limited. Everything seems I can't. Everything seems it's not possible. To change things means that it has to happen slowly because it's dense and slow like treacle. But when you realize that this reality is just a physical illusion, it's a holographic illusion, and that what we call human society is simply a projection of the sum total of human perception, So if you can pull people into identifying the I with labels, first of all, you have infinite ability to divide and rule by playing the labels off against each other. But you also bring people into a sense of limitation. And this, I know identity politics is all about divide and rule. I know that. But it's about something else. It's about subdividing labels into smaller and smaller self-identities. So now you have this long list of letters where people feel the need to self-identify and label the fine detail of their sexuality. I don't care what you do with it as long as the receiver's happy. I don't care. None of my business. Don't make it my business by telling me what I have to do because of your no, thank you. I won't do it. But what I'm saying is that that's what happens when you self-identify with the labels, which is what human society tells you to do. But when you change your self-identity and you say, I am consciousness, I am an infinite state of awareness, having a brief experience called human. And these labels are not me. They are what I am experiencing. And when the me leaves, I will take the experience, but I won't take the labels because they're just a brief experience. And what happens is as you expand your sense of self, you naturally start moving in to greater and greater swathes of consciousness. Very quickly, you go beyond the realm of the cult. And once you do that, the world of the cult, what we call human society, totally changes. Instead of seeing everything random and dots like you do in this mode, suddenly you see the pictures, you see the patterns, you see the connections. This is the process of awakening. Is not awakening to something. We are already that. It's awakening from something, which is the perceptual programs that have disconnected us from a conscious connection to the true I. And so this process of seeing the names, dates, places level, very important, but also with it, moving your consciousness into expanded states of awareness. These two things go together. Because once you do that, you see that in a completely different light. They don't want this cult is working so hard to keep us there. And so what keeps us there more than anything else? Fear. Because fear is a very low vibrational to the point of freezing state of being. So if they can hold us in levels of fear, they're holding us in their stadium. And they've played that card massively, of course, in 2020. But when you hold on a minute, I am all that is and ever can be, having an experience called human. What is there to be frightened of? Oh, frightened to death? Well, would you want to stay here forever? You got forever to explore forever. Of course we're going to, quote, die. What do you mean die? The body ceases to function. We don't. And so when you come from that perspective, everything changes, including you don't fear. You're not intimidated. All the things that we have to be controlled by a few people disappear, you know, which is why I say I'm not going to wear a mask under any circumstances. Oh, we'll pull you in jail. Go ahead. You can briefly enslave my body. You know, enslave my mind. Like yours is enslaved or doing it. You know, everything changes, you know. And, you know, when you realize that we are on an eternal journey of exploring forever, forever, what matters about what happens in one fleeting smear of what we call time. There'll be another experience along in a minute.
David Icke, thank you so much. We're coming, went so quick, our allotted interview time with Revolution Radio and our new sister entity, Rising Tide Media. And one final question. You observed, when humanity remembers we are all one consciousness having different experiences, you just mentioned, the illusional fault lines that divide us will fall and peace will come. How do you see a true peace coming?
Once you realize we are each other, but unique expressions of each other, that's why glorying in your own uniqueness and the realization that we're all connected are not exclusive of each other. They are different expressions of the same thing. And when you think this is just, you know, this is just an experience, it takes the, I saw an advertisement once. It wasn't a good advertisement because I can't remember what it was for, but it was brilliant little cameo. And it had a baby coming out of the womb and flying through the air at very fast speed. And as it was flying through the air, it was getting older and older and older and older and older, till it was an old person and it crashed into the grave at the other end. And I thought, well, that just sums up how people see life. It's like, gotta get somewhere, gotta. And you go, well, when you're trying to get, oh, I'm trying to get here and there and there and there. And then when you get there, how do you feel now? Well, I don't feel any different, really. A bit more pressure, right? So it's like, gotta. But when you realize we're on this eternal journey of exploration forever within all possibility, chill out. And when you realize we are each other, the desire to have conflict, to walk all over so you can get above them. Or, you know, I'm not against competition. Competition in sport, it can be, you know, it's good, and it can drive people on. I'm talking about walking all over people so that, you know, you get to the top of the greasy pole. None of this matters once you realize we're all each other. And, of course, once you stop self-identifying with labels and the desire for your label to have power over other labels, the divide and rule potential just completely disappears. And I have a simple philosophy on life. Do what you like, so long as you don't impose it on anyone else. That basically negates almost every law that exists. They are unnecessary. All laws are unnecessary. Once you reach a certain level of consciousness and awareness and interaction, laws are necessary to overcome the limitations of ignorance. That's why we have them. You don't need a law that says you shall not murder, when the idea of taking another life would never enter your consciousness. But in lower levels of ignorance and programmed perception, you need a law saying you shall not murder to discourage people from doing it. Another level of consciousness, no need for any of it, because you wouldn't think of doing it. And that's the difference between a suppressed consciousness society and an expanded consciousness society. So, and because, I'll finish on this, because human society is a collective expression in how we live and what we experience of human perception. When human perception changes, its projection changes. So this idea of, oh, you know, it changed, it's ever so slow. No. Change perception changed the world. Change collective perception changed the world. We've had a lovely chat. We've got on great. We've had an experience because of that. We could have had an argument and cussed and shouted, and we've had an unpleasant experience because of that. So when we change our perceptions, we change the world. This is why perception is the stadium in which it's all played out, and why the cult wants to control perception, because by controlling perception, they control human society. We need to take our perceptions back, and then we'll take human society back. No guns necessary.
Bravo.
David, you know, it's so important how you always take things into the spiritual, because a lot of people get stuck on the conspiracy. And really, ultimately, this is a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual battle in some sense. And I just want to thank you for coming on and sharing the spiritual aspect of this, as well as the informational side.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. We must do it again.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you again. You are a true hero of mine and a true hero of humanity. And God bless you. We're sending you positive energy here and everybody at Revolution Radio. And I'll send you the links when we get these shows up. And thank you so much, sir. And God bless you.
Thanks very much. Just say no.
Thank you very much.
Take care, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, David Icke, his return to Revolution Radio. I was informed that Icke many moons ago had actually been on Revolution Radio, so I did not mean to step on anybody's toes. But that Icke was a little easier to get to than this Icke, so I will say that. It took me 3 months to line up this interview. So what an amazing man, and it's great that he recognized the importance to come on Revolution Radio and to, spread the word. And, man, would that be cool to get to see him in person these days? I would like to. I've never seen one of his speeches live. I've watched them, but that's got to be something special, don't you think, Scorpio?
Yeah. Open philosopher in the chat room on Rev Radio was saying he saw Icke speak back in 1999 in England. So that must've been awesome. But yeah, we got to get past this social distancing and this concept of super spreader events. Cause I'm sure, they would immediately brand anything David Icke does in America as a super spreader event right now. So
yeah,
it's ridiculous. And, you know, I just thought what he was saying was great, man. The spiritual side of this is so crucial, because once the vibration goes high enough, once people are allowed to progress, it's going to become obvious to the entire world that we don't need these controllers and we don't need their control system either.
Oh, man, that's well stated. Well, you know, it's funny that many decades I have had no faith and actual disgust and disdain for transnational corporations, for the chicken swinging Satanists at the top, for the government. I mean, I still voted and all that, but I'm so awake in so many ways now, and it's almost laughable. They're really desperate. What they're doing now is so heavy-handed, so desperate, and that's why I came back to the mass media, because, you know, if we can wake up, let's just say, been doing this, 4 months now, back in the mainstream media. Well, this is not the mainstream, back in the mass media. And if we can wake up during that 4 months, if we woke up 100 people and they tell, you know, a couple people, and they, you know, you start to get an exponential effect. And what I'm happy to say is people who live like in Wisconsin, conservatives, like my brothers and lifelong friends, they were all like, you're out of your mind, man, when I was telling this stuff 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And now they're like, you were right. And so the gentleman, my good friend I went and had lunch with, he gets it, and he's likes acupuncture now. And but now he really gets it. And, you know, so he's talking to people. And I asked him when we went to lunch Thursday, and I said, are you going to get the vaccine? Hell no. Do you know anybody who's going to get the vaccine? No. And then, well, my mom might. I'm like, your mom just turned 88. She can't get that vaccine. And I, he goes, yeah, but, you know, she's kind of still hypnotized. And I'm like, dude, you better unhypnotize her. I duded him. And so, but we're gaining ground. I think that's why they're so desperate with this insane lunacy and incredible sophistry and lies going on right now in the mainstream media and from these Democratic governors and from Bill Gates, the disgusting subhuman, undeserving of life demon that he is.
Yeah, and you know, as I alluded to earlier, this is a sign of fear from the controllers, because if they really thought that they were winning hands down, what do they care if a couple of crackpots are talking on the internet, right? Instead, they're doing all they can to purge any thought, any ideas that contradict the official government narrative. It's a sign of fear, no question.
Yep, without a doubt. And coming up right after the break, the great Susan Bradford, one of the best investigative journalists, muckrakers around today.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be good. Very perceptive woman and a great author as well. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Her books are really good. Yeah. I'm really curious to get her take on, you know, it's only a couple weeks till one of these ridiculous, toxic, dangerous, deadly vaccines hits the market. And, you know, this week, I don't know if you saw it, but Gates is making the rounds on the mainstream, mind-raping globalist television stations like CNBC and CNN, and he's really angry that nobody's taking this seriously. And, you know, the reality is nobody wants that shot. People are starting to wake up because, geez, you know – Even people in their 70s only have like a 0.005 chance of, or 0.05, one less zero that old. But you have more danger from getting a flu shot if you're 7 years old. It's 0.1. So it's just this. They thought they had their bioweapon. They finally thought that this is the one, because everything that has been a so-called pandemic of the last 40 years, including HIV, it's all been created in a lab. It's all gain of function bioweapons they release trying to push this in into a global mandate, because they're indemnified, right? Tony the Rat, right? Fauci. So it's insane. It's really insane. But, you know, hopefully this time the chicken swingers, BB9's great phrase, they always go too far. They always push too far, and hopefully this backfires on them like one of those spy shows where the gun fires backwards and they steal the gun and then they shoot it at the hero and instead it shoots them. That's what we need to have happen in this reality now.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting how the vaccine agenda is a big part of what the World Economic Forum wants? And of course, the WHO is run from the United Nations. This is all one big agenda. I can't breathe. Yeah, so they're working from a master plan, and things are getting a little rocky for them. People aren't going along as well as they used to. Okay, there's the music. We'll be right back at the top of the hour with Susan Bradford. Everyone stay tuned. Okay, welcome back to hour number 3. Of Operation Scorpio. And of course, last hour we had our part 2 interview with David Icke, and this hour we're going to bring on Susan Bradford, a real muckraking journalist and a great author and a true free thinker. You know, real investigative journalists are few and far between now. It's just disgraceful, the behavior we see from the mainstream media and what passes for journalism now. So without further ado, let's bring on Susan Bradford. Susan, hello. How are you?
Yes. Hi. I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, great. I thought maybe we'd start off and just get your reaction from, you know, all this dirt that's come out on Hunter, the crack master, Biden. you know, and the mainstream media is just sort of denying that any of this is true. Oh, this is unverified. Oh, it's from hacked material. You can't look at it. Instead of digging into what's going on, what are your thoughts on all this? And this is the reaction from the mainstream media.
It's a very sad, you know, reaction. And clearly, you know, the media is doing offense for Hunter Biden because their preferred candidate, Joe Biden, the father, is the establishment's choice. And there are a number of stories coming out about his, you know, the money that he stood to make in China and has made through Hunter Biden. So they're counting on Joe Biden to hopefully win in the next election. I don't think he has a chance, to be honest with you, but they're relying upon Joe Biden to help reverse some of the progress that Trump has made and to continue the descent of the United States and the ascent of communist China. But I think it's very disgraceful how they're treating this story.
Well, and it's amazing, too, how all of a sudden now, you know, China is this big new enemy, which, mm-hmm. you know, I think they are. But of course, it's the best money, the best enemy money can buy.
Exactly.
The deep state or the shadow government has been doing all they can to build up China since the very beginning of the communist revolution. And I believe they even helped the communists win the revolution. And of course, the Rockefellers have been in there since the 1950s, aiding and abetting the rise of China. And now, of course, there's a lot of talk that, we might have to go to war with China.
Yes, and you're right that not only is a communist China the best country that money can buy, but you know, we did actually create communist China, or actually the cabal did. So we're not at war with China. I mean, the Chinese people, you know, yearn to be free just as much as the Americans do, if not more so. Communist China was created by Wall Street. In fact, at the end of the 19th century, the cabal, through the roundtable and other groups, had planned to have a they had planned for China to lead a new world order in which they were going to absorb the world's wealth into their own hands and preside over the world as a world dictatorship with themselves on top. And so very gradually, you know, they laid the foundations for that to happen. During World War II, the Rothschilds set up international networks through the, for example, through the Office of Strategic Services, which was modeled after the MI6. That allowed them to work with groups like AIG, which was then like a very nascent insurance company, to map out communist China, to make it to make it available eventually for their corporations to move in and tap those markets. Now, a lot of these corporations and multinationals are aligned with the Rockefellers and are controlled by the Rockefellers through and Rothschilds through interlocking boards of directors. They are multinational and international in nature. They owe no allegiance to any country, even though they have been built upon the assets of the taxpayer through a public-private partnerships. So over the course of decades and through successive administrations, we basically had our country sold out to communist China with the help of groups like the Skull and Bone Society, Yale University and their Divinity School, and even groups like the National Committee of U.S.-China Relations that helped transmit the propaganda into the public domain to condition the United States into accepting the rise of communist China and even embracing it. And so essentially we have allowed the devil, if you will, inside our own camp. And this was all done at the direction and with the funding of the multinationals.
Well, well stated, Susan. This is Giuseppe. I believe you know who I am.
I do.
You know, I'd like to get your thoughts on, you know, they're the three city states, Washington, D.C., the Vatican, Holy See, and the City of London. There's various people who believe each one. For example, there's a fellow host here, a great guy named Watchman, who's trained in like the evangelical tradition, and they backstabbed him, so now he's paving his own way. A really bright guy, but he believes it's the Vatican, the Holy See, that's controlling everything. And
your research has led you to believe it's the crown. So tell us what the crown is and how they wield their power.
Sure. And just to backtrace a little bit, the Rockefellers are actually the Rothschilds, who mentored the Rockefellers, but the Rothschilds, financed two sides of both wars. So they're able to put both into debt, pit two countries against each other, like they're trying to do with China and the United States. They would finance both sides, and then the debt that incurred would then allow the Rothschilds to have control of the governments because they would control the money supply. So prior to the Napoleonic Wars, the Rothschilds had no in with the Vatican, but essentially they were able to finance Napoleon, who then attacked the Holy Roman Empire. Once the Holy Roman Empire fell into debt, they were able to take over the Vatican and acquire financial control. They also pit Napoleon against Great Britain. Again, they financed both sides, and they ended up breaking the British bank, the Bank of England. And in the process, they were able to essentially acquire breeding rights into the royal family. So they controlled both the Vatican and Great Britain and the royal family, actually. And another point that very few people know is that they also were behind the American Revolution. And you could ask, why would they, you know, be behind such a noble movement as that which we had? Well, the crown at the time was attempting to acquire resources to fight Napoleon. So by and they were doing this through taxation, you know, by attempting to tax the colonies. So by mobilizing the colonists to resist, you know, no taxation without representation, they made the British crown vulnerable and eventually dependent upon them, and were therefore able to take over the crown. So essentially, they do control both. I know it's a very long-winded response, but essentially, the Rothschilds control both, or they have done, both the British royal family and also the Vatican.
No, that wasn't long-winded at all. It was actually very interesting. And of course, I agree with what you're saying. It seems like somewhere in, like around the 1840s is when the Vatican got into serious debt to the Rothschilds.
That's correct.
And then, of course, you know, I agree with what you said about the American Revolution. Mike Gatti has done a lot of research on that. And there was agents of the Crown and of international banking cartel just crawling around the American Revolution, including Alexander Hamilton and one of the unknown financiers of the revolution, Haim Salomon.
Yes, that's correct. Alexander Hamilton also attempted to establish the first central bank in the United States. Thankfully, it was the charter was not renewed. And in order for them to continue to try to put the American or North America into their debt, they financed the American Indians to fight the colonists. And then, of course, they in turn needed to, they needed resources to fight those battles. And so they were then put at the mercy of the Rothschilds, who had the resources to offer them, the financial resources.
Yeah, and of course, the charter of the first central bank in the United States expired in 1811. And then, of course, lo and behold, 1812, we had war with England.
There you go. exactly right. And they were behind the British crown was behind financing that war and pitting the American Indians against us.
Susan, you at SusanBradford.org list many, you're a prolific author, many of your books. Why don't you tell us if you're recommending to new readers, what are three or four of your must-read books?
Okay, thank you for that invitation. And my books really represent like my own personal exploration of the deep state. I entered knowing, I had some knowledge of what was going on, but my big education took place during the Abramoff investigation when I discovered that Jack Abramoff, who was then one of the the most prodigious and esteemed super lobbyists in the United States had been set up for criminal prosecution through a very partisan Department of Justice, working in concert with the media, congressional committees, and the different arms of the government. In fact, the information that they were providing or levying against him directly contradicted the paperwork. So it was a coordinated effort orchestrated by lobbyists on behalf of very powerful interests, including casinos and international actors. So once I discovered that this had happened and that the entire political establishment went along with it, I decided to look a little deeper, and that's how I discovered that the deep state had established its tentacles within the United States through the back door of the nation's federally recognized Indian tribes. And those were predominantly among Jack Abramoff's clients. So if you're interested in that take on the anatomy of a partisan federal prosecution, I have detailed that in my book Lynched, which is available on Amazon. And I built upon that some knowledge that I had acquired from Pastor Lindsay Williams. And Lindsay Williams was a pastor who joined the oil companies who were attempting to drill for oil in Alaska. And he discovered that the United States had more than enough oil to be rendered energy independent for, I think, over 100 years, you know, to the point where we would never have to, you know, we would never have to engage in international, you know, wars without justification, wars of adventure to, you know, to seize the resources of other countries. But he said that there were some shadowy figures who prevented us from developing that oil. So I knew that that the deep state had been involved in corralling that oil and then transforming them into Alaska Native corporations. And that was, of course, after they received a $1 billion settlement to extinguish the rights on the land. Of course, most of the money disappeared into private hands, as it usually does in these cases. But I knew that there was a shadowy element involved. And once I understood that aspect from Lindsay Williams, I was able to find out Kissinger's role. You know, Kissinger, of course, Henry Kissinger was the Secretary of State under President Nixon, one of the greatest deep staters and war criminals. And I was able to find out how he used that the oil to create what are called linkages. And what linkages did is he went around the world meshing different countries into different forms of dependency, where the deep state controlled the oil, the gold, the natural resources, the economy, the money supply, the media, and they would pull different levers to manipulate the conditions of the country, which would essentially prevent it from acting in its own interests. So in that way, they were trying to build, you know, the New World Order, which was, you know, a global dictatorship that they controlled. And so the story of that and how that ties into communist China, and again, you know, our political establishment sold us out to communist China. I detailed how that happened as well. You can find that information in my book, The Shadow Dragon. And then after that, my next book was The Second American Revolution. In that particular book, I show how the Bolshevik Revolution, which Wall Street had financed, and you know, they destroyed the Russian economy as they were attempting to seize Russia's assets, eliminate competition, and conquer Russia as part of, you know, as part of their global empire. In the 1970s, the Russians were able to purge their Bolsheviks, which Henry Kissinger then put into our political establishment in order to hasten our demise. So the current neoconservatives and these crazy radicals on the left, and I'm sure you see very similar tactics deployed on both sides, they're coming really from the same source. It's a radical revolutionary element. And I describe how that happened and who they are in my book, The Second American Revolution. And then most recently, I've written a book called Unmasked, The Coronavirus Story. And with that, I show how the deep state, going all the way back to the City of London, patented the coronavirus and its vaccine before rolling out this pandemic, which was intended to be a joint collaboration between the Department of Health and Human Services and the armed forces around the world to coordinate their efforts in order to vaccinate the population. And this was part of a larger technocratic New World Order agenda. So if you're interested in how that was laid out and how the radicals burning down our cities are tied into that plan and really draw upon the same financial and political forces, that's all laid out in my book, Unmasked. And that's also available on Amazon.
Wow, interesting. Susan, your research into China is fascinating. What do you think about this idea that, you know, this hidden hand or the world controllers, whatever you want to call them, they've studied a lot of different systems of government. At this time, they've determined that the Chinese system is the most efficient and the best system to control the masses, and that they want to try to introduce that system to the United States, possibly through the mechanism of a, let's say, war, but maybe, you know, sort of a controlled war that is scripted. What do you think about that line of thinking as a possibility?
I think it is a possibility. Their pattern has been to pit countries against each other to as part of a divide and conquer strategy. So I believe that the cabal is trying to pit China and the United States against each other. They did create a very tyrannical model in China, which they thought would be most effective in the sense that they could corral the country's resources and dictate the type of economy they wanted and build, I guess, a type of economy that was dictated by the corporations. What they don't like about America is that we have at least somewhat of a democracy left, and that the people can resist and throw wrenches into their designs, so that they definitely want to have the rest of the world emulate the model that they built in China. And I know that currently they have a Chinese credit score that, you know, that conditions the people into becoming, you know, compliant to their agenda, you know, and of course if you don't if you fall afoul of your social obligations, according to the communist Chinese, you'll have your rights and privileges taken away. That credit score and system was set up and designed by Eric Schmidt, who was the CEO of Google. And he, in turn, was working. I don't believe this project is still ongoing. I could be wrong. But at one point, he was working with Jared Kushner at the White House to set up a system whereby they could connect the coronavirus with a sort of a track and tracing type of technology. So I do believe that they were attempting to implement something that mirrored the Chinese credit score system in the United States using the coronavirus as a pretext, as a cover.
Wow, that's pretty despicable, Susan. One thing I'd like to follow up with your statement a few moments ago about the British company that patented the coronavirus over there. That has to be a gain of function mutated coronavirus. I think the Brits laws are like here in America, where you cannot patent the coronavirus that's ubiquitous in nature, but like Fauci and his minions have mutated them, and they patent their version of the corona. Is that the same in Britain?
That's a very good question. I don't know that I fully have the answer for that. I do know that it was it involves some type of manipulation of the DNA of, you know, your genetic code, or of it has some type of genetic component to it. The patent is processed through Serco, which is an American company that is controlled by the British monarchy. And so the patent is actually processed in the United States. So I'm not sure if they're.
It has to be that you talked about the genetic manipulation. That's the gain of function right there, man. I know you mentioned it on one of Dr. Jim Fetzer's shows the last week or so. Need to know the Fetzer Report, where you're a regular commentator, as are I and Scorpio, working with the great Fetzer, which is such an honor. But you brought up Serco a couple days ago, and I looked them up because I really hadn't heard of them. And wow, they're spooky. So what have you discovered about Serco?
Yes, so Serco and Kinetec, is Q-I-N-T, I-Q, I believe, which represents that the company begins and ends with the Queen and her a golden share. These companies have our government contracts, so that they're taking money away from the taxpayers, and they're controlling. I believe that they control the website for the Affordable Care Act. They have contracts with the IRS for FEMA camps, and for a lot of the technologies that would be implemented through the coronavirus, like the RDIF chips, tracking technologies, and that type of thing.
Amazing.
Susan, there's a question from the chat room from Eagle Flower. Doesn't Serco also control the airport flying system, you know, the tracking of the airplanes, or is that correct?
I don't know off the top of my head, but it wouldn't surprise me. That would be the type of thing that they would do.
Interesting. And where do you think the control of this company lies? Have you looked into the owners of it, or where, you know, where that leads?
So the owner would be the figurehead of Queen Elizabeth II, who owns the controlling share, and that allows her to determine the policy and agenda of those companies. And then the royal family receives counsel from the Privy Council and an ultimately answer to the Rothschild dynasty. So yeah. I think the Rothschilds will be at the top of that.
So, Susan, what do you make of this breakneck Operation Warp Speed lunacy? Could be as soon as 3-4 weeks they roll out the first vaccine for the hidden nanoterrorist, the coronavirus, which is so insane to me. I can't really believe they're going forward with this, but yet they are.
Yes, I mean, that has worried me greatly, to be honest with you. From what I've heard from my sources, and so far they have been right, and God willing, they will be right this time. My understanding is that Donald Trump will not make the coronavirus mandatory. And he is pushing ahead with an agenda that is an alternative agenda to that offered by the cabal, and that is to offer free medical treatment. So he's preventing the pharmaceutical companies from being able to profit through the coronavirus. And I know that one of the companies that was vying for to have the opportunity to offer the vaccine was Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly has sponsored pastors with the United Church of Christ and other organizations affiliated with the World Council of Churches, which is a global body through which the Rothschilds have dictated or virtue signaled through the churches, and have coordinated community organizers who are in turn burning down our cities and trying to create devastating economic conditions that will further the collapse of the United States and will create the conditions for a Green New Deal. So that was the alternative company, and Trump has rejected this for a voluntary vaccine that will be free to the public. So I think that we do have reason for hope there.
Okay, we're at the bottom of the hour already. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back with the final half hour of Operation Scorpio with Susan Bradford. Okay, welcome back to the final segment of Operation Scorpio. I'm here with Giuseppe, and we're having a conversation with author and muckraking journalist Susan Bradford. That first half hour just flew by. Susan, I don't know if you caught it, but on the mainstream media, you know, the enemy war footage, as I like to call it, they had an interview with this guy named Gottlieb, who was ahead of some big, you know, intelligence agency in the United States. And he actually stated that whoever controls the coronavirus vaccine will be the geopolitical leader of the world.
Wow.
I wonder if you had heard about that and what your take was on such a nonsensical statement by this man.
Yes. Hi, Scorpio. I hadn't actually heard that. Now I'm really speculating at this point. My thought would be that that the virus, at least from the cabal's perspective, is intended to is as a control mechanism. So it would potentially wipe out the human aspect of the personality to wipe out feelings and empathy, and to transform us into robotic creatures who can follow commands and you know, fulfill our duties as within like a slave technocracy. So I think that they are assuming that whoever is going to have control of that control system through the vaccine would therefore have control of the masses. And that's purely speculation on my part.
Wow, no, that's very, very interesting take on that, Susan. What kind of a bizarre B-grade science fiction movie have we wandered into? I mean, really?
You're absolutely right. And this all stems to it's a manifesto called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars that was launched with the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II in the 1950s. It was authored by Prince Philip and the Rothschilds, and it basically laid out their agenda for the technocracy that we're now experiencing. And they actually state within that manifesto that they intend to reduce the people of the world to beasts of burden and steaks on a table. They want to harvest our energy to be used as efficiently as possible. So what that would involve is corralling us into, you know, technological gulags and, you know, rationing out food and energy and resources to give us just enough resources that we would need to, you know, to replicate ourselves, you know, through children and to survive and do our daily tasks, with giving us very little beyond that. Meanwhile, you know, they would have corralled the world's wealth and power into their own hands. And they would create the discrepancy or difference between the general population and themselves to have such a great divide that that the people would not know what had happened to them, and that they would have no means with which to challenge them. So that has been their agenda since the 1950s.
And incredibly, they pretty much pulled it off in the last 8 months, because in the last 8 months, while the classic satanic grifter of look at what my right hand is doing when my left hand is doing the real job, they've pulled off the greatest wealth transfer in the history of this economic system in the last 8 months. It's amazing and so disgusting, and the average citizen has no clue.
No, that's very true. They created the conditions for this economic collapse and for, you know, the conditions that we're currently experiencing, and then they help themselves to another bailout.
And
you
know, and what's coming soon, right? Probably right after the election, is yet another bailout, even more largesse for the 2 billion ton ticks that affix themselves to Uncle Sam.
Yes, that's correct. That's what it appears to be what they're doing.
So now, if you can say, what's your next book you're working on?
That's a very good question. I have a few that I'm working on. I can't really discuss them at the moment, but I'll definitely let you know in the days ahead. But I'll keep you waiting.
Oh, great. Well, we look forward to hearing that breaking news when the news breaks. So what do you think is going to happen with the election in, like, what, 18 days now? Let's see. Is that right? Well, something like that, about 2.5 weeks away. How do you project what's coming?
I think we're going to see a lot of twists and turns. I think the cabal knows that if we have a second Trump term, that that their plans could potentially be derailed for good. My understanding is that Trump is working on behalf of the people. So I do support him. I haven't been entirely uncritical, but I think he has done the best he can in these circumstances. And I've also heard from some of my sources, and we'll see, you know, the days ahead how accurate they are. But they're saying that there's a strong possibility that that Biden will be charged with treason before the election, and if that were to happen, he would be eliminated as a candidate, and Trump would win by default.
Wow, interesting. That would be something.
That would be a wild ride if that one actually happened.
Yeah.
What do you make of President Trump's, you know, kind of strange, you know, he caught coronavirus 33 days before the election. I don't know if you were aware of that. And then he had a miraculous recovery within days. And then and now he said, hey, look, I'm immune to it. We don't need to worry about it. And I don't have to hide in the basement like the other candidate does. What was your take on that whole kind of very strange, you know, turn of events with this President Trump catching coronavirus?
That's a very good question. Of course, I don't have any access to the Trump White House, but it does appear that the Trump is an ingenious politician. And if I had to guess, I would think that he's again engaging in a very masterful masterful theatrics, whereby he's communicating that the public has very little to fear from the coronavirus. And I think he's trying to perhaps weaken the demand for the vaccine. But I think this is an ingenious ploy on his part, you know, to kind of discredit or derail the coronavirus narrative and to get the people behind him.
Oh, that's a very insightful observation. It's funny because he did not have the novel coronavirus at his age. If he actually had that bioweapon, he would have been fighting it for quite a while. I had SARS in 2018, and it took months using all my natural medicine tricks and techniques, because every time you think it was gone, you'd feel good for a day or two, then boom, it would come back. It would hide in the gut and then back again. Took like 3 months. So the other thing I thought was really interesting is, even though Trump was a proponent of hydrochloroquine, he made a big deal out of getting the unreleased antibody cocktail and the the new drug, and he did it all through Big Pharma to placate them, like, oh, this is the real deal to help Trump. I mean, that dude is hopping around more than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, trying to keep everybody happy and not fall off the razor's edge. I give him a lot of credit for he's managed to do it for the whole first term. And he has been so attacked in so many ways.
I think I saw that. And if I'm not mistaken, once he announced a type of vaccine that he was going to use or some type of treatment, the pharmaceutical companies immediately rose and their share prices immediately went through the roof. And then the next day he said he didn't need them. They fell again. So it appears that he is playing the market or playing the game very well.
Yeah. And the antibody cocktail company is his longtime golf buddy. So that he was all helping that. So yeah, he is a masterful, understands how to work the mass media. That's for sure.
It's like go ahead.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. Excuse me.
I wasn't going to say, I was just going to say that he's like the leader of a three ring circus.
Oh, well stated. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, just briefly going back to this thing with Hunter Biden, you know, what strikes me about this is just the mad rush to cover it up. Say, oh, there's nothing to see here, folks, nothing to see here. But what I see is that this is a lot bigger than just Hunter Biden. You know, so many, almost every politician that gets into office leaves the House and Senate as a multimillionaire. And I think we're sort of getting a bird's eye view of how they do it. This behavior of Hunter Biden, I think, is just the tip of the iceberg from, you know, just like business as usual in terms of how things work at the swamp. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely right. A lot of people, you know, go to D.C. to do good, and they end up doing very well indeed. And unfortunately, the way the cabal has set up the federal government, there are ample opportunities for them to help themselves to the taxpayers' money or to the power of the government in order to line their own pockets. So unfortunately, what we're seeing with Hunter Biden is just business as usual. It was just that his father happened to be running for president, and he got caught. But I think there's much more of this than, you know, we have not seen.
Plus, Hunter Biden is a drug addict, and he's a buffoon. And so he was so clumsy and lacking guile and stealth. In fact, it's come out that I need $3 million from you, Mr. China, if you don't to make this connection, you know. And so talk about ruining it for all these other parasites. I mean, Hunter Biden, what a lowlife, my God.
I mean, if you can imagine, a lot of these people who are, you know, very, very wealthy, they've never had to work really a day in their lives. They can just make an introduction to facilitate, you know, the flow of money to shadowy interests and make a fortune in the process. So he really never developed, you know, street smarts or any, you know, any real applicable or usable skills. And, you know, you get what you get. And I think George W. Bush was much the same way.
Excellent point. Yeah, it's really funny. I mean, you know, it's funny how people forget even recent history, because if you think about it, Jack Abramoff was kind of a hero. You know, he was an iconoclast as a super lobbyist. And in some ways, he was helping the people. And now you look at the only news, the lobbyists never are in the news unless they're true Satanists like the Podesta brothers. And then some of that leaks out because they're so arrogant. And like Big Earn in the movie Kingpin, where Bill Murray goes, Big Earn is above the law. And so that's what the Podestas believe, which in some ways they are. But if ever there was some people, some lowlife Satanists I'd like to see taken down, it'd be those two, man. That would be good if Trump gets his second term, because I don't know if you ever saw when they were staying at a known British pedophilia aristocrat's house, and then this girl was kidnapped and murdered. And the people who saw the girl kidnapped, they did with a forensic sketch artist. And it's like the artist was at the county fair and he drew a sketch of the brothers at the fair. It's so them. It's no doubt they did it. And so yet they get away with it. It's just unbelievable.
You're absolutely right. And just going back to Abramoff, ironically, he was attempting to restore power to the genuine natives who'd had their tribes taken away from them by the cabal. And in order to stop them, the cabal launched this horrendous scandal against him that stripped him of his assets, his reputation, his career. And, you know, so he, you know, unbeknownst to many people, he was actually doing a lot of good in Indian country, and he was forcing the government to honor the treaties that they had negotiated with the Indians. So unfortunately, you know, he has been maligned in the process.
Yeah, no doubt.
Interesting. And do you have any, like, what's Jack Abramoff doing now? Do you have any information on what's the end of the story on him?
I don't really follow him. I did see that, unfortunately, he got involved in Bitcoin, and somehow he got caught up in attempting to do a little something shady there. I think, and I'm not defending him. I don't know him. I haven't, you know, been in touch with him for for close to a decade now. But it did appear that due to the financial duress that the settlement that he negotiated had placed upon him, I think he ended up owing somewhere in the the realm of about $80 million. I think he was trying to pull out tricks from his bag of lobbyist tricks to make get some money through blockchain. I think he's under some type of federal investigation again, or he may have been convicted and looking to serve prison time.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, I've been saying for a while that the only path to victory for the Democrats is massive cheating and voter fraud. Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, Groper Joe manages to win the presidency. And what do you see happening in the United States under a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris presidency?
That's a very good question. They've been trying to push climate change and environmental emergencies for a long time. That is just an extension of the technocracy. It's a Green New Deal. And what that would involve is the complete deindustrialization of the United States. They want to move us from gas-fueled cars to electric cars and eventually have us do away with cars altogether, such that we're confined to very small and controllable technological or high-tech cities that would allow us to walk to work, maybe work and study from home, and to be monitored and tied into the matrix every minute of our lives. That's where they would like to take us. And so when they talk about a Green New Deal that will create high paying jobs, they're talking about jobs that will eventually or essentially implement this this beast system. And they're essentially trying to create a type of oppression or a tyrannical system over and around the American people.
Oh, wow. That's a good description. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not possible to power major cities with windmills and solar panels. This will be an absolute disaster. And I guess they're planning on using lots of nuclear energy as part of their Green Deal.
Yes, I don't think they necessarily care about efficiency, because the people will be left with what they're left with. It will make things a lot more difficult. And I think, as you know, you may have seen now, everywhere you go, there are problems in, you know, day-to-day activities. Whether you go to, you know, if you try to use the bank or different services, nothing seems to work right. The websites are more complicated than they need to be. Things are not in properly or clearly laid out or intuitive. They're trying to make life as difficult and to put as many obstacles in the way of our progress as possible. So you're absolutely right. You know, the windmills are not efficient. If we were to lose, lose control, not control of the sun, but, you know, access to solar power, you know, your electricity would turn off. And a lot of the solar panels on homes are exceedingly expensive, but they're looking at getting very lucrative government sponsored contracts, implementing and imposing the system upon us, and then we're left with what we're left with. And they think there's really going to be no turning back. And meanwhile, they're going to be enjoying the best technology that our money can buy.
Yeah, man, that's how it always rolls with the parasites in the federal government. The taxpayers bankroll the development, bankroll the innovation, and then through some shady deal, it's backdoor handed to someone in private industry who then can become a millionaire or a billionaire and pay off the people who gave it to them through the back door. There is nothing but corruption in this federal government anymore.
And that's what they've done through these public-private partnerships. So essentially they're trying to dictate consumer choice and then have the taxpayers support those choices so they can guarantee market share for themselves and force the government to pay to provide us with, you know, products and services, or force the public to relinquish their own assets to purchase what is required of them. So they end up being, you know, the winners either way.
Right. And of course, this new Green Deal, Green New Deal, or whatever you want to call it, all stems from the United Nations, from the, you know, United Nations Agenda 2030. Correct. And it all dovetails together into one giant agenda. And of course, look how this corona virus epidemic is feeding right into to the green agenda as well, because here we certainly lowered our carbon footprint. People aren't traveling. And people are staying at home more. So it's all part of this massive, you know, agenda that's under one umbrella.
Correct. It's as if they were trying to condition us to into accepting this new system. That's absolutely correct. And the United Nations, of course, it's part of Agenda 2030. They had set this up after World War II, you know, first with the League of Nations and then with the United Nations. And what a lot of people don't know is that they allowed Stalin to have access to, you know, through the Security Council, to have access to all of our military plans. So they actually allowed the Soviet military to have access to our military, ensuring that we could never win any wars going forward. So every aspect of this globalist system has been, you know, quite treasonous.
Oh, yeah. What's amazing to me is just how treasonous and despicable the federal law enforcement is, the Department of Justice, the FBI, and even the CIA, which isn't supposed to even be operating in the United States, but is rampantly operating in the United States. It's just, you know, it's really sad. And there's some people who believe more and more that the elections are just a beauty contest to placate the masses, and nothing really ever gets done. And it's we're in this inevitable march towards globalism. What are your thoughts on that statement?
I would actually like to give your audience some hope. I know it does appear that way, and that has been the way the system has worked since the world wars. However, the illegitimate powers that shouldn't be have been discovered to be illegitimate. And so there are patriots within our government and worldwide who are dismantling the system, and they are rolling it back, and they are going to prevent the beast system from being implemented. What Trump is trying to do, and this is what I understand from some of my my sources, is that he's trying to reveal what the cabal is, how they operate, who the players are, and then he is going to empower the people to take matters into their own hands to then reclaim their country. So the system is being being cleansed and reset in a very positive way.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting. Well, gosh, you know, Susan, this hour has just flown by. I know that Giuseppe and myself would both love to have you, you know, come on every 6 weeks or so to kind of do an update and continue our conversation. Would you be up for that?
Oh, it would be my pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to both of you. You're very knowledgeable, and I always enjoy our discussions. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I'm always impressed by your insights, and you come at things from a little different angle than myself. So I'm always left with things to think about after we talk. We're down to the last couple of minutes, so maybe you could just tell us what projects are you working on now. Tell us a little more about your website and anything else you want to say about what you're doing.
Thank you. My website is www.susanbradford.org. Any of your audience members are more than welcome to email me with questions. I'd be happy, you know, to answer them if I can. And I think that despite how bad things may look, I do think that we have a lot to be hopeful for. I'm not spreading a hopium when I say that. There are some very positive changes happening in very high places, and I think you'll be seeing more of that in the days ahead.
Great. I'm hooked on hopium.
Well, that's better than fentanyl,
right? That's true.
Giuseppe, what are your final thoughts as we close the show off?
Well, I think that it's been wonderful to have Susan, and before that, to wrap up the David Icke interview. Want to thank everybody for joining us, and we have had a great crowd in the chat room and a lot of Listeners were texting and joining in on the StreamYard video side of things. So appreciate it, and spread the word about Operation Scorpio, about the Wisdom Circle, about the Perfect Triangle. And of course, don't forget Monday through Friday, Need to Know the Fetzer Report, which we're all commentators, and Susan and Scorpio are the regular Friday team. And so it's a really a great show. I mean, Jim Fetzer, who puts together the narrative and the script, does a fantastic job. And tune in to everything. And we appreciate your time, because time is valuable. And I got to go do an injection between my toes of hopium.
Okay, we're down to the last minute. Susan, what would be your final thoughts for today's wrap-up?
Well, I was going to ask you, Scorpio, I'd like to hear your final thoughts. Like, what do you see in the days ahead, and what do you have to tell the public?
Well, boy, you know, I kind of vacillate between being very hopeful and seeing dark days ahead. I do think they're trying to unveil this depopulation agenda. And part of this COVID, emergency we're supposedly living through is to sort of soften people up towards the idea that, well, you know, it's just another virus-infested zombie that's passing away. So maybe it's better if there's less people. That way there's less possibility to transmit the virus. But on the other hand, I think they're failing in a lot of ways, and they're making a lot of mistakes as well.
They are absolutely.
Yeah, so as they say, it was the best of times and worst of times, and may you live in interesting times. So we'll see what happens.
Said. Very well said.
But I do think it's going to be a wild ride here in the next month or so, so everybody strap on their seatbelt and get ready for the show. Okay, that's it. There's the music. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Giuseppe, and thank you, Susan. We will see everybody next week. Take care. Bye-bye.